There we go. We're live. All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Pivot Ready Live. My name is Dirk Van Rienen, the founder and CEO of Barkflow. We've got Amy McDaniel joining us. She is our operations integrator. And then a very special guest, expert extraordinaire, Wesley Marie. Guys, Brad's got the evening off. If you guys are used to seeing Brad, so the rest of the team's kind of jumping in, and we're doing the live today. I'm not very familiar with StreamYard, so are people supposed to be in here, or are they just kind of seeing us at different places?
You're live to Facebook and LinkedIn.
All right. Is there any way that you can tell how many people are watching this?
I think in the background we can.
Yes, there's a little thing up in the corner of my screen that says there's people watching us.
There are people watching us. All right, guys and gals, tonight we are talking about how to motivate your people and how to drive motivation within a team. And I think, I've been seeing a lot of news recently that all the big companies want their people to come back to the office, right? The virtual kind of world, people are struggling with that. And I think people are getting distracted. They're getting unmotivated. You know, there's a lot of talk about, obviously a looming recession, what's going to happen out there. And I think in these times, companies that have strong culture, that have strong team buy-in, that have strong levels of commitment and high levels of motivation, these are the times that they can take exponential market share from their competitors. And that's really the game that we're in a downshifting market, right? If anything shifts in the market and there's all of a sudden a potential that there's not as much business as there was before and the market's not expanding, then the game that we're actually playing is taking market share from competitors. And there's a saying that we have in Barkflow, and we've had the saying for a long time, and the saying is that the companies with the best teams will win, period. Right. So the question's always, we talk about building pivot ready teams. The question always becomes, how do we build the best teams? How do we build great teams that when we focus on our people, when we focus on building great teams, great culture, then as a byproduct of that, we have really great productivity, really great efficiency, right? We're driving revenue, we're growing, we're taking market share, and then usually the last really nice payback is profits, right? And time freedom as an owner. So that's really kind of what we're talking about here. And I'm excited to have Amy and Wesley on for this conversation, because this is something that I think, it's so critically important. And it's something that I'm always learning about as a CEO, as somebody that does coaching and training. And I think one thing that we want to just share with you guys, I share this so that you guys can get context of who we are if you don't know anything about Barkflow, but we are a training, coaching, consulting company that really specializes in helping service-based organizations scale. That's really what we do. Most of our clients are around at least around $1 million a year in revenue, and now up to about $16 million in revenue. We actually have one of our clients that this year is making a climb right now, where they're going to go from $14 million last year when we started working with them, and this year they're on track for doing somewhere around $60 to $70 million, right? Just explosive growth. But they're definitely an outlier. But that's kind of what we do, is we specialize in helping companies go to the next level. Now, one thing that is important to us is also that it's not about us just kind of sitting around and being like, we're going to kind of dream up things to tell people. We also own multiple seven-figure companies that we are growing and scaling as well. So besides the work that we do for clients, we own other companies. We're actually in the process of acquiring another seven-figure company right now. And the principles that we talk about and the principles that we teach are the principles that we live by. These are the principles that we run our companies through, and how we are able to continually gain growth and momentum, hiring and training really amazing people. And that doesn't mean that we always do it right or always just get it perfect. But what I feel that we have is a proven model of how we're doing business differently, and the proof, the success to prove that it works, not just in our companies, but in many, many of our clients' companies as well. So let's kick off and really talk about this, right? What does it mean to motivate your team? And I'm going to come to you guys. And I mean, this is a very candid conversation. We didn't get together before this call and say, what are we going to talk about? Or, you know, how are you going to answer to what questions? Like, this is just live. And by the way, if I don't know if anybody can ask questions in here, like, again, like, I don't know how this, but if anybody has a question, like, ask the question away and we'll dive into it. Right. But I want to start with Wesley and then go to Amy. You know, when you think about motivating people, motivating your team, where does that start?
So, Dirk from Mossad, understanding people at a deeper level is at the core of understanding motivation. People are motivated by different things for different reasons. You know, Gallup does a really good worldwide market report, and I was actually on a webcast this morning, and the data that they pulled or extrapolated from the 2008 recession to last year. And employee engagement is one of those things that it doesn't happen as a byproduct. It happens because of active investment by the leadership. So if you look at leadership in a company, people that are engaged in the work environment are 7 times more likely to succeed. So in other words, there you get a 70% higher return on investment on those that are actively engaged in the work environment. And these are things that we're seeing from the Gallup report. And one of the other thing is, you know, when people are not engaged, so post-pandemic, you know, on the possible brink of a recession, all the stuff that we hear in the media, is 57% of the US workforce currently are not engaged. So they broke it down into the 4 indicators. One is stress, worry, anger, and sadness. So worry, anger, and sadness, those are all showing a moderate decline. Stress actually increased. And a lot of people think, well, people are working remotely, you know, just because they're working remotely, by default, their stress are going to go down. But not understanding people, some people just like a work environment. People feel detached. You know, people who don't engage with their leadership on a regular basis, they don't have that injection from the leadership to actually motivate them. So motivation for me at the base is understanding people. And 2 is, are you aware of how this is affecting your business? Amy, I'll put it over to you.
Well, I think you're right. I think I would just expand on that a little bit. And understanding people, it's more of a very specific understanding each team member. What motivates me can be very different than what motivates other people on our same team. We had this conversation earlier today. I'm super intrinsically motivated. Like, I'm motivated just by making progress. And so I don't need a lot of external high fives or good jobs to drive it. I just need some direction. And I don't think that's true for everybody. And so I think in understanding people, it's understanding each individual person on your team and what is motivating to them and what's encouraging to them as well.
Yeah, so the only caveat to that I would add is a lot of people are interested in how do I motivate other people? And as you rightfully say, it is understanding them at a much deeper level, not just in the work environment, but they also have personal lives, they also have relationships, they also have life goals. Is you need to understand your behavior and how your behavior is influencing them. So even though the position or the opportunity might be motivating to them, there can be a breakdown because as a leader, somebody might be showing up that's actually breaking down motivation.
Yeah, I think, can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I switched to my headset. I think one of the things that's interesting, right, is I love what you guys are saying about it. It's about understanding the individual, about knowing the person at a deeper level, about understanding, you know, what their role is, what the fit is, right? And I think that also it starts with, as a company, the way that you view your people. It starts with intrinsically who you are as a company, and usually that's going to start with, you know, who the owner is, the visionary. And then it translates very quickly to who the leadership team is, you know. And I think that's something that's really important. But I think one thing that I have really had to learn in my life, and one thing that I've had to go through a big transformation is, you know, I was raised very much in kind of like the era of production, like production matters, and like how many hours you work matters. And you know, like in leadership was kind of like telling people what to do and like knowing all the answers. And, you know, that was kind of my blueprint for what it meant to be a business owner and entrepreneur. And really, I mean, I kind of had that blueprint, you know, all the way up to probably about, you know, 30, 31 years in age. And then, you know, I started kind of really seeing like how that was limiting what I was building, my level of success. And I mean, mainly like how I was building teams. When it really changes from not hiring people, like you're not hiring people to come work for you so that you can build a company you want, but that you start hiring people to get to know them and who they are and what's important to them, and creating an opportunity for them to succeed and build a better life while you're in business together, then everything changes, right? Because then you start winning as a byproduct. In business, you start winning as a byproduct of other people winning, working with you in the business. And I know for me, like that's been the biggest single transformation in you know, kind of knowledge. And I know that everybody's probably heard this saying that, right, if you help enough people get what they want, then you can have anything you want. And I'd always heard that saying growing up, but I was just like, that's bullshit, right? Because I mean, like, you know, I'm an immigrant from a different country. Like I lost a business in my late 20s, you know, and it was always just kind of like, man, I gotta work really hard. I gotta do what I need to do to kind of like just survive and move my life forward. But truly, as I'm on this journey of understanding and unlocking, what does it really mean to get to know people and help them win? Everything is transforming in my world, in my business and everything. And I believe that that has to be at the center of how you approach this whole thing about motivating people, right? Because if that's not at the core and at the center of motivating people, then I think what happens is you're going to use and try to use the wrong motivators to get people to do what you want them to do so that you can get what you want. And I think that is the biggest difference, right? Is coming from that point of, can I truly get to know somebody to help them succeed in a position where they can really unlock success for them, right? So kind of going from that and getting to know somebody from that standpoint, like in the hiring process, what are some of the things that you're wanting to get to know? And I do want to talk about this in two different ways. One is, how do we learn these things from people that we're hiring? And then how do we learn these things from people that we're already in business with that maybe we didn't get to know the right things when we hired them? So from a hiring standpoint, what are some really good things to do of, like both you guys said, like getting to know people and getting to know their strengths? Either one of you can take the question, doesn't matter.
I'll let Amy go first this time.
Okay.
I don't know that I have a really good answer. But I think that the way people show up in their personal lives is how they want to show up at work. People don't want to be one person on the weekends and necessarily have to change who they are when they come to work. So, and I think one of you mentioned this earlier, but just getting to know them, you know, you think of like canned interview questions of like, where have you, you know, succeeded at work often, but like, what do you do? What are your, you know, hobbies, or what challenges you, or what are you learning, or just getting to know them on more of a personal and taking an interest on a personal note is going to give you a pretty good indicator of how they're going to show up at work as well.
Yeah, and I think that that's so important. I don't think people spend nearly enough time getting to know people at a personal level, like not nearly enough time, right? And there's this whole thing of, well, you got your personal life and your business life. And I think like we're kind of done with that era. Like I think people want more integrated type living today, which means that their personal life is somewhat affected, you know, by the business life and vice versa, right? So I think, you know, Amy, you make a really good point of also saying like just get to know what their habits are, what their goals are. I'm a firm believer that, look, you're not going to hire somebody that has no goals, no ambition, no discipline, you know, no grit in their personal life, and then expect that this person is just going to show up in the business world with all of those traits, right? That is complete BS, right? What you want to do is you want to get to know people at a personal level and find out who is somebody at their personal level. They set goals, they're learning based, they're showing that they're willing to go after things. They put challenges in their path to learn, to grow, to conquer things. They're willing to give, they're a team player. Like, if those things are all already part of who that person is, it is just a natural transition for it to show up in business. But I think people, you know, talk a big game during interviews, and then people don't go deep enough to really get to know them to say, is there any validity in what this person says? Then the person shows up at work and all of a sudden, like, no, they're not goal oriented. They don't have discipline. They're not willing to be learning based. They're not coachable. And now you're kind of stuck with this person. You're like, man, like I who is this person? Right. So I think like that's a huge part. Wes, sure. So let's come to you on that answer. And then I see Nikki's got a couple of questions here too that I want to get to. But what does that look like for you? When you're hiring somebody, how do you get to know them?
So it's a loaded question. As far as the easy answer is, you need to have a structure and a process that you take them through. The traditional hiring system of 30 minutes, you know, coffee at Starbucks and here's a job offer. You don't actually get to know that person. So the question that I often get asked is, how do I know that I'm actually interviewing the right person? Is, you know, Dirk, you can answer this question. Is, how many times have you seen people apply for a position just because they need to pay their bills, just because they need to make ends meet? So that happens very often, and we all fall victim to that during the employment process, during the interview process, because how many of us have bought stuff that we actually don't need? Somebody was such a good salesman that they sold something to us that we actually don't need. The same happens during the interview. People will sell themselves based on what they think you want to know. Because if you're still hiring in like an analog system, like you did 20, 30 years ago, hey, 30 minute coffee, here's a job offer. People in the employment sector are saying, well, that's an easy code to crack. I just need to show up in a certain way, get a free coffee and a job offer, and then I'm done. We're not living in the analog world anymore, so you cannot live by those rules on the hiring. So for me, is you need to have a very structured hiring process. And secondly, is you need to be able to identify talent. So there's the ability to identify talent, and then there's, hey, I'm just hiring. But in order for you to identify talent, you're going to have to motivate that talent to exist and remain in your world. And that is going to require active management from your side. It's going to require active leadership. You know, Gallup also says people nowadays are looking at their employers as coaches, not as managers or employers. So there is a coach mentality. Then, you know, people come into the work environment. Am I being a better person for being here? Or am I just paying my utility bill at the end of the month?
Yeah, I think, man, if, you know, when people apply for a job, right, I think they kind of see the title, I think the first thing they look at is the pay range, right? Like, I want to make so much money, and then, hey, what do I want to do? And then they read the description. And really, what they're looking for is a transaction, right? Hey, I'll give you my time and effort and energy, and you're going to pay me for that. And you know, one thing that I think is so powerful, and this is something that we practice and something that we teach as well, is drop the transaction and build a relationship. While you're going through the hiring process, really get to know the person. Understand if they really are the right person to help you succeed, and are you the right person to help them succeed based on what's important to them. And the more time that we can spend up front, then what happens is we stop hiring people that are looking for a job, and we start hiring people that want to be a part of a team to accomplish a mission. And that's what matters, right? Because I think it's like, look, work's hard. Doesn't matter what you do. Like, there's going to be good days, bad days, boring days, you know, great days, whatever it is. I mean, it's a mix of all of it. But the difference is, on one hand, you know, you go home and you're like, you had a hard day, and you like go sit on the couch and you're like, oh, today was hard. Like, I hate what I do. I hate the people I work with, right? On the other hand, it's like you sit on the couch and you're like, oh, you know, today was a hard day. But man, like, that was crazy. Like, we worked together as a team and it was insane and we did a lot. And I mean, there's still a lot of challenges, but man, like, I love the people I work with and I love the company I work for. And the difference in those two approaches, I think, Wesley, this is what you were saying when you said like 70% of like production increases by 70% when people are engaged, right? I think that that's the stat you shared. That's it. Like, if my team can be just 20% more engaged than your team, I'm going to beat you in the marketplace, period. And this is also where I can do more with less budget on my team than you having a really high level budgeted team that's less engaged, right? I mean, you know, and I think like that's the great opportunity for people, is that when we get to know them, when we take them from like, hey, I'm looking for a job, to like, I want to be part of this company. I want to be part of this team. I want to learn. I care about like the things that this company cares about, and this company cares about the things that I care about, then it's a natural fit. That's hiring people when we look at who they are, when we look at their level of, life and the things that are important to them, and, you know, their true strengths and their gifts. And then secondarily, we start looking at their experience and their skill. Because I think like that's what we look for typically as an employer, right? You're like, what's their level of skill? Like, what can they do, and what's their level of experience? And then I want to offer them based on that. When we don't even know who they are, we don't even understand their journey that they've been on, who they are as a human being, what's important to them, like, what do they really want to accomplish in their life? What are they naturally really gifted at? You know, what are the things that I can help them with to develop as a human being? And as they develop, they can do so much more than they've ever done before. When we can change the way that we look at this from hiring, then what happens is we start actually hiring the right people. Like, surprise, like, you know, when I'm just looking at things transactionally, then there's a lot of people that show up and I don't know if they're the right fit or not. I go ahead and hire them kind of based on a transaction. I'm not hiring them based on like, hey, are we going to be a fit to be in business together? Right? Do we align on values? Do we align on culture? Do we align on wanting to be together as a team to go accomplish this mission? And I think especially the companies that don't have that right now with their teams are going to get their asses kicked in the next 2 to 3 years. They're going to take a brutal beating. Which means that if you can get ahead of this and start really getting to know your people and understanding, do I have the right person in the right position? It's going to give you an exponential competitive advantage in the marketplace, because we've already been hearing companies saying, you know, hey, I can't find people. It's so hard. Like, the two biggest things that we hear the companies are struggling with is staff and staffing. My current people and not being able to find the right people. We constantly hear that, right? So I think that that's really important. So let's kind of switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about this one, right? Or actually, I'm going to come to this question that Nikki had, because it's an interesting question, but I want to talk about this. We kind of talked about the hiring process a little bit. You need a really defined process, right? I absolutely agree on that. Let's talk about already working with people. Your current team, how do you motivate your current team, right? And I don't know if you guys want to share about like what happens on our teams, or, you know, our clients' teams, like, from whatever perspective, you yourself, whatever the case may be, but what do you guys see as, you know, how do you motivate a current team? Like, how do you stay on top of that?
So for me, motivating people that you're in business with, you know, one is it's a mindset shift to say, I don't have employees. I have people that I'm in business with. I was having a conversation with somebody earlier today, and they were commenting, it's like, well, normal people do this. And I'm like, well, normal people live normal lives and they have normal results. My philosophy for my life is I live a life by design. So if that's the way I live and I surround myself with people that have the same mindset that I live a life by design, the saying that do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life becomes very true, because you're actually doing what you love. And if you treat people transactionally that work in your business currently, they're going to respond transactionally. So if you are treating them like hourly employees, they're going to say to you, well, for every minute that I spend longer at the office, you need to pay me. Mm-hmm. So you need to understand, one, what is the intrinsic value system of that person? So there's two levels to this. You as an individual have a value system that we need to find a cadence around, but your company also has a value system which is stipulated in your MVVC.
And that, right, so hang on, what's a MVVC?
It's your mission, vision, value, and culture statement.
Okay.
Yeah. So when you talk about your MVVC, your mission and vision and values, those, that's intrinsic. It's in the DNA of your business. It's why you exist. It's how you do what you do and why you do what you do. When you talk about your business, the client, the public facing side of your business is culture. When you describe your company, you're going to describe the culture. This is what we do and this is how we show up doing it. So culture is the most public facing side of your business, because that's what you're going to describe. It's like, hey, Wesley, I need you to come and work for me. It's like, well, what's it up? Why I like working there? If my answer is like, what do you want me to do and how much are you going to pay me? It's transactional. You know, all the studies are indicating that people are looking for job satisfaction and engagement much higher than any other attributed work.
Yeah, and Amy, before you jump in, I just want to kind of add a comment to what Wesley just said, right? Because I do think that there is a big shift, right? There's not this attitude of, hey, you're going to get a college degree, you're going to go work for a company for so many years, you're going to be loyal to that company, you're going to be do what you're told, even if it totally sucks, right? I think the whole thing with job satisfaction today is like, I want to work where I want, do what I want, when I want, with who I want, and you know, it's almost kind of like the whole thing has shifted. Especially over the last 10 years, right? I mean, we've just been an incredible, you know, bull market, an expanding market in every way. Now we're really at the first, we thought maybe it was going to be COVID, but I mean, COVID wasn't really that. It's, you know, in a lot of industries, right? In some industries, obviously, like the restaurant industries, hospitality, you know, cruise lines, stuff like that, like they got hit hard. But I mean, in a lot of the kind of companies that we work with, which is primarily, you know, home service type companies, commercial type companies, you know, in that kind of arena, there's a lot of companies that just have, even since COVID hit, have doubled, tripled in size, right? I mean, just really exploded in growth. So now we're kind of maybe looking at the first time of this thing contracting, right? But I mean, if you are kind of have a decent resume and you're willing to work hard and all that kind of stuff, and you know how to interview, it's like your options have been wide open the last couple of years, right? So now we're maybe kind of switching it, but it's still part of this that we can't go into it with the mentality that it's a transaction. Because what popped into my head was, so when you're talking about the, hey, I'm gonna pay you just hourly this to do this, it's the way that you view people too. Even if you pay somebody hourly, you can't just say like, oh, they're just an hourly worker. Like I hear people that have virtual people that work for them, like VAs and stuff like that. And they're like, oh yeah, they're just some VA. Like they barely know their name. I'm like, dude, like that person's still part of your team. Like you should send them a t-shirt and a coffee mug and like tell them that they're part of your team and part of your company and, you know, still include them, because then that person feels like they're part of a mission. They're part of a company. They're part of a team. They're not just a VA that's being contracted by some company to do work based on hourly rate or whatever the case may be, right? So it just comes back to getting to know people, treating them like humans, and, you know, making it part of the company. Like it's we're here, we're a team. And I love what you said, Wesley, because I mean, this is something that I learned probably 6 or 7 years ago. And, you know, I use it all the time, is that nobody ever works for me. Like, we're always in business together. Like, hey, this is, we work together, right? I don't say like, oh, this is Amy and she works for me. I say, hey, this is Amy. We work together. We do business together, right? And it's part of that. Like, the way that you treat people sets the foundation for how they respond to that. If I treat somebody like Wesley said, like an hourly employee, they're going to show up like an hourly employee. If I treat somebody like, you're important to me, I want to help you succeed, we're in business together, it gives them such a different frame of mind of how they can show up in that space with what you've created as the expectation. So anyway, I just want to comment on that and go to Amy. What do you have for us?
Well, I think you guys pretty much covered a lot of what I was thinking. I do think it starts with being on mission together. And it does come down to the culture. And to your point, Dirk, I think it's not just top down either. It's, I'm in business with my teammates. We're still pushing to the same goal. We're still driving. But I also think at the end of the day, we're still working for something. And there's still a level of accountability. And sometimes I think we put too much weight in motivating people and not in that weight in just being accountable to, and not just like, hey, I have to do this to make the owner more money. I think it goes lateral almost more like, hey, I have to do this so that my team succeeds. I have to do this. So, you know, and sometimes it's, hey, I got to hammer out phone calls today, even though that's my least favorite part of the job, but I have to do that to move the business needle. Because we're all invested in that. And so I think, you know, sometimes trying to make it too much fun or make it too complex takes away from just the basic of like creating partnerships and creating a team and being accountable to other people and their success and their motivation as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a good point, right? Because it's like, you know, somebody could be listening to this and they are maybe saying like, oh, you're just describing friendships at work, right? And that it's not at all what we're describing, right? Because, I mean, a team that has a mission has to be accountable to reaching that mission. The term that we use is care and candor. You have to be able to display care and show people that you truly care about them. And you have to be able to use candor with people. And kind of the way that we use it is like, look, there's a difference between like, look, sometimes you got to hug somebody and show them that you care for them. And sometimes you need to drop the freaking hammer on somebody's head and you really have to like have a stern conversation, like teach them a lesson. Like, and I'm not saying like you teach them a lesson to like break them down. It's that you're letting them experience something that can build them up, that can help them think differently, that can help them understand that what does it mean to be on a team? Because Amy, exactly what you said is that you're accountable not just to, you know, getting what you want, and you're not just accountable. It's not either that about like getting the company what the company wants, right? It's about we're a team and we're in this together. I'm accountable here because I'm a team member. We're part of a mission in this company. And the company, we use the boat analogy a lot. Like a company is like a ship, and we have a multiple examples and models of how a company is just like a ship, right? But the most basic version is that the ship is going somewhere, and we're all on the ship, and we all have different destinations, right? Some people are going to be the company for another two years, some for 10 years, some for maybe 20 years, you know. And so that means that we're kind of going in a direction, but there's different ports where people are going to get off. And sometimes people have to walk the plank, and sometimes we stop at a port and more people get on, right? But the important thing is that if you're on the ship, the job is about building a better ship so that we can get to the destination faster. And as we're doing that, as we're building a better ship, this is where we're serving our clients and our customers and, you know, doing the work that we are meant to do, right? Because it's one of these things that I think when we can look at doing that in a way that we're clear about where we're going, that we're clear about what each person's role is, and then we can help each other by practicing care and candor with each other, building each other up, supporting each other, coaching each other. You know, because same kind of thing that, you know, I believe as a CEO, I need to be held accountable by you guys, right? I believe that my services and operations and growth leaders have the right to challenge me, have the right to hold me accountable, because you're not here to help me get what I want, right? You're here to be part of a team that we can win as a team and the company can succeed as the company. So just because I have the title of CEO doesn't mean that I have like carte blanche, like what I say goes. I'm God in this company. I'm the owner and the visionary and the CEO. Like, I don't believe in that, because if that person thinks in that way, they're not willing to be held accountable and they'll never become the leader that they could become if they were accountable. Same kind of thing for all of you guys. There has to be a level of accountability that you have to submit to if you are ever going to become the leader that you could truly become. Because without accountability, and I laugh at people that say I hold myself accountable, right? There's a certain level, and very disciplined people can hold themselves to a certain level of accountability, and then that accountability stops, right? You know where your limit is, and you'll stop there. And that's why every pro athlete ever, every really great business person, actor, you know, you name whatever professional there is in the world, they all have world-class coaches. That coaches understand how to push them past their limits. Because again, like if you guys read the book, Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins, right? Or maybe it's in Living with a Seal, right? But like one of the books, right? He talks about that we mentally shut ourselves down at 40% of our actual physical capability, right? So some people are very disciplined and they're going to get hired to that 40% and maybe push just a little bit past, but a great coach can maybe take you to 50 or 60 or 70% or maybe 80%, whatever the case may be, right? And I think that is part of kind of like Wesley that you mentioned, that Gallup says, like, look, people want a great coach today to work with. They want to work in teams. They want to work with coaches. They want to learn and develop and grow. And that's what they're looking for. It's not, I don't want to be an employee and go get my paycheck every 2 weeks and just do what I'm told. Like, I want to be part of something more significant. I think like that is the general consensus out in the work world today.
Yeah. I was in a psychology session a couple of weeks ago. One of the people brought up, what is a nice way for you to gauge, you know, what are you selling and what am I buying? If you're asking me to come and work at your company, what are you selling and what am I buying? And the obvious answer to that is, well, are you willing to apply for the position in your company that you're offering? And if the answer is yes, give me the reasons. If all the reasons are, well, I pay great and great parking and they're shaded parking and you get a free t-shirt, and I'm like, you're just mentioning all these transactional things. If I'm applying at your company to come and work there and all you're giving me is transactional answers on why I should work there, you're selling a transaction. If you can describe the culture and my dreams, my vision, my motivations, I have a wife and kids, the things that are important to me. If that's important to you, then you're selling something bigger. Then there's a vision. This company is going somewhere. But if it's transaction, I'm only getting you from A to B and I'm expendable. And the moment I'm underskilled, as the business grows and my skill set taps out, then you just hire someone else. So, you know, then you revert back to, you know, a 3.5 year swinging door. Because every 3.5 years, they say you have to change the job that you do to stay relevant. Mm-hmm. So if to avoid that, you have to ask yourself, am I selling a transaction opportunity, or am I actually selling something where there's motivation and opportunity in front of us?
Yeah, I mean, I think in our world, we call it ascension, right? Our entire ascension program in Berkflow is about how to create that path of opportunity for people, how to unlock that in them, how to let them learn and grow and develop, you know, from the first day that they're being hired, right? But I think that that is so important, right? And you know, one thing that Ron put in here that I love is he says have you know, people that work for you that don't have to be babysat, and that also that self-motivated individuals are a dream. And like, I cannot agree with that statement any more than that, because we actually talked about this on a different call earlier today. Is this like babysitting people or having to micromanage people is the most draining, tiresome, demotivating thing that I could possibly think about, you know, as a business owner. And in every company that we have, and we haven't changed this yet, in every company that we have, we don't have a single person on hourly rate, right? Every single person's on a salary, and every single person understands kind of, you know, what they need to do, and they go to work doing it. And it's one of these things that thinking about having to punch the clock or watch people or try to micromanage or hover over them or motivate them is, it just sounds terrible, right? And that is kind of the funny thing about this call, is that true motivation within people is not something that's just done by the company. It's done by hiring people that are truly motivated and inspired by the opportunities that they have and the career that they have. That if they are inspired, if they are engaged, if they are already motivated by that, then you don't have to sit there and try to motivate them all the time, right? Then your job is just to help them succeed as a leader. And that's where the game of business changes. But you have to know who they are, and you have to know what they're good at, and you have to know what they want for you to succeed at that, right? So I do want to go. Yeah, Wesley.
I heard the saying, motivation is fanning the flame. You're not starting the fire. And if you're motivating people, there's already a fire there. They have an internal drive. They're internally motivated. If you're hiring people that are not internally motivated and you're trying to instill motivation in them or a natural drive, if you can fan a flame, it's a lot easier than starting a fire.
Yeah. And I do think too, is this like, I heard this one time, right? It's not about trying to motivate people. It's about trying to inspire people, because if you can inspire people, there's a level of self-motivation that kicks up, right? And so you have to find out what inspires people, and different people are inspired by different things, right? I mean, everybody on our team are inspired by different things. There's all different things that kind of, that, you know, and I think like a lot of the too is like, if, you know, if you've got a week and unlimited budget, like what would you go do? Right. I think everybody on our team would probably do something a little bit different, because we're all inspired and motivated by different things. And when we get to really know people, then we can learn, how do we align what naturally motivates them and inspires them with the position that we're putting them in? So that if those two things came together, then there's a natural progression of them succeeding at a higher level. If those two things can't come together, doesn't matter how much you're trying to fan that flame, you know, or throw, you know, fire starter on it, it's just not going to take. It's like trying to like catch big, wet, burning logs on fire. Like it just is hard. But I mean, I think if you find somebody that they're ready, like really going, I mean, it's like they've already got a fire going and they're doing their thing. And then it's like, you can just like pour gasoline on it. It's like, right. And that's hiring, putting them in the right environment and putting them in a position to succeed at the highest level. I mean, what are your thoughts around that?
Well, I think too, we have to be a little bit careful in talking about motivation in the sense of there's a difference between micromanaging people and paying attention to people. Some people on your team are going to require a little bit more attention and a little bit more connection and a little bit more touch than other people on your team. That doesn't mean that they're not motivated. It just means that that's who they are. Somebody who, my assistant that works under me is very task driven, and I literally just have to give her a checklist and then help her check things off, and that's what motivates her, is checking off the checklist. But I also have to encourage her and check in on her, whereas me, like, you give me a checklist and don't talk to me again for 3 weeks and I'm perfectly fine with that. And I think that's a big difference in just, again, it all comes back to knowing people, mm-hmm. knowing what they need, not just in a motivational sense, because when you start talking about micromanaging and, you know, you don't want to just have to drop everybody and never talk to them again, especially in this remote culture. I think that's a really important designation as well.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, that's a, hang on, Wesley, go ahead.
I was going to say, you're touching on, you know, human behavior and the motivation behind human behavior. Some people have, you know, fixed learning styles, whether it is through repetition. Some people are trial and error learners. Some people like the autonomy that comes with the position, like the one you're describing there that you're in. Some people do like a more rigid, structured environment. So the position in your company will dictate the amount of active management needed to succeed, but finding somebody and truly getting to know somebody, understanding their behavior, you know, and there's many tools that can help you do that, but the sooner you can do that, the higher your success rate. You know, as I said earlier, your percentile success rate massively increases because that person feels engaged. It's like, well, you're actually treating me the right way. You're not asking me to paint by numbers when I'm a problem solver by myself.
Yeah, I think, Amy, man, like that was just such a great point, right? Because one thing that we can't do is, I was taught that it's called benign neglect, right? Meaning that if I've got five people and two of them are really, really great, self-motivated people that are almost like self-managed, like they, like you said, just kind of give them a task they can run. You got one average person and you got two below average performers, right? Kind of poor performers. Where do you spend the majority of your time as a leader?
On the poor performers.
Right. The natural tendency is I spend the majority of my time with these people, probably a little bit with this person and very little with these people. And then their natural thought is like, well, you know, the leader's always spending time with them. I guess I'm not that important to this team, so I think I need to leave. And one thing that I was taught is as a leader, the high majority of all of your time has to be spent with your top performers. And what you're doing is you're then encouraging your top performers to then reach down and work with some of the other performers in the company. And you got to exit the poor performers, right? I mean, you're always going to look at what can I do? Where's my fault in them not performing? So I think that that's always the place to start and put them on a plan to help them increase their performance. But, you know, it comes down to always like, is this a skills issue or is this a performance or a commitment issues, right? If it's a skills issue, then we can work on the skill. We can teach you something. We can go to a training course. We can, you know, put you in a coaching program, whatever it is. But if it's a commitment issue where you're just not committed to doing the position at the high level, then we have to get out of business together, right? And I think that that's something that we can't take for granted because, you know, great people that do great work, you can't just ignore that. And I think that that's where, you know, the culture comes in that you've got to spend some time doing stuff with people, right? It's just like, you know, just finding ways to spend a little bit of time, you know, and it's just like, you know, for me, like this weekend, right, we were kind of hanging out because Amy does multiple things in my world and we have an outdoor adventure ranch in Texas. And Saturday we hosted this big Toyota event and we built this test track. And so the Toyota came out and dropped off this brand new, you know, 4Runner TDR Pro, like top of the line off-road 4Runner. And I was like, Amy, let's go jump in this thing and cruise around the test track, right? And I'm driving it. And then I'm like, Amy, you should drive it, right? And I mean, in that moment, it had nothing to do with anything work-wise. It had nothing to do with talking about anything. It was just about having fun, you know, and having an experience together. And it's spending that little bit of extra time, you know, and that's why, like, when we do off-sites and stuff like that, and like earlier this year, we went on a Workflow family ski trip together. I mean, it's spending that time together with your top performers where you're getting to know them, you're getting to pour into them, you're creating experiences for them, and then you're showing them that you care. Because if you got great people that are showing up, that are taking high responsibility, they're moving things forward, you still have to find time to spend time with them to show them that you care, right? And then, you know, at every level, and I mean, like for us, like that's at the executive level in our company, right? at the lower levels, I think it's just like you said with Adriana, it's look, she's very task oriented, but then sometimes you just need to check in with her and like, hey, how are you doing? Like, what's going on? And that doesn't mean that you're micromanaging it. It doesn't mean that you're like looking over her shoulder, like, well, how are you doing this? And when did you get done? You know, like all that kind of stuff. But it's just checking in on her and knowing that, you know, she's important to you, that you care about her, that you want to help her succeed, you know? And I think that's just such an important thing for leaders to understand about motivation, is that if people know that you truly have taken the time to get to know them, that you care about them, and that you want to create an opportunity for them, they're going to show up in a different way. And the payback is, hey, as you're doing those things and you're learning and growing and performing at a higher level, we're going to unlock more opportunity for you in this company, right? That's the trade-off, right? I can't create more opportunity for you in this company if you're not showing up in a way that tells me that you're really committed to this company, committed to learning, growing, going to the next level, right? But that's the commitment in the work world. So I want to go to this question that Nikki had a while ago, because this one's so good, right? She said, I often see the comments that no employee will ever care as much as the owner. Does that mean that they aren't figuring out how to motivate them, right? So yeah, there we go. I don't know how that just lit up. Like, I don't know how that happened, but that's cool. So this is such a good one, right? We used to hear this all the time. We don't hear it as much anymore because we already now start working with people that, like, we won't work with somebody that doesn't believe in their team and really want to take their team to the next level, right? That's one of the caveats for the companies that we work with. But I hear this a lot. Like, you know, sometimes when we go to trade shows or different things and we're talking to people, and they're just like, well, I just can't hire good people. Nobody will ever care about this job as much as I do because I'm the owner. And I'm like, dude, it's like, just that belief already has taken you out of the game for building a great company. You will never actually build a great company if you truly have that belief, right? My belief is that you guys can care more about our clients than I can, and that you guys can serve them at a higher level than I can. Because that's the only way that I know that we can ever build a truly amazing company, is if you guys can do it better than I ever could do it. And that's my job, is to go find people that are better than me, that are smarter than me, that are more specialized than me, that whatever the case may be, and just create opportunity for them. Like, that's the only thing that I can do as a business owner to ensure any level of success. If I'm the one that always cares more than anything else, and I'm the one that always works harder than everybody else, and I'm the one that always knows how to do the right thing, then I will never build something beyond myself. I'll never actually build a business. I will just have a self-employed business, right? And being self-employed in a lot of ways is actually worse than being just an employee sometimes, right? Because there's a lot of people that are self-employed that, you know, if they actually worked as hard as they worked for somebody else, they'd probably get paid a hell of a lot more money, right? There's a lot of people that work for themselves and have businesses, and they're working all the damn time. They're just not making money, and they never have time for their family. And I mean, it's just like hell. They're trapped by the thing that they've built. And of course, nobody else can do it. Nobody else cares as much. And it's just like, as long as you're in that mentality, I think you're just completely stuck, right? So Nikki, I think the first thing is the owner has to have the mentality and really have a mindset shift of like, okay, look, I can't be the smartest person in the world. I mean, obviously you're probably not the only person that owns that kind of business. And if you're on here, there's probably a lot of businesses out there that are even bigger than your business in your industry. So somebody has figured out how to do it, but why not you, right? Just look at it and say like, what would it look like? What would my life look like if I found somebody that actually cared more about my business than I did, and they're willing to work as hard as I am, and they're willing to care? Because there's examples everywhere out there of people that have done exactly that. And I think that's the thing, is when you hire the right people and they're part of a team and they're part of a mission, they'll show up, man. Like, that's one thing that I don't feel like I have to do, is like, I don't have to tell people to work hard ever. I mean, like, if anything, I should probably sometimes tell people to just take more time off. Right. But I can just think of examples and examples of how people are showing up, and it just like floors me that they care that much, that they're that committed. And for me, all I want to do is then say like, I want to create more opportunity for that person. Like, how can I help that person live a better life because they're showing up like that in my world? And I think like, that's where business becomes good. at that level is where things kind of click into this alignment that business is more than just going out and doing things for people and getting paid. There's something more special about it. There's something bigger about it. There's something more powerful about it. And I think, you know, for us, it's like we want to work with the companies that get that realization, because we believe that the companies that understand that deserve to massively outgrow the companies that don't get that. We tell our clients, like the people that we truly believe that care about their people, we tell them, we want you to get so big. We want you to take out every other company in your market, in your industry that doesn't understand what you understand. Now, of course, we're always trying to teach that and preach it and, like, you know, help people understand that. But there's just companies that they don't understand, like they don't want to understand it.
Yeah, Dirk, just as you're talking through it, you know, I was in a conversation with an executive recently, and I mean, this executive has been with the company for a very long time, and they earn north of 200,000 a year. That's probably another 100-150 in stock options, and they moved from one company to another company for the exact same pay, not for an increase, but because there was opportunity in front of them. Mm-hmm. There was motivation for them to say, you know what, I actually like going to work. I actually like what I do now. It's not about the money. It's not that they said, and, you know, even if they come back and say, here's another 50, 75K a year, this person wouldn't stay there because it's not about the money. It's in my relationship and in my personal life, I'm feeling broken down because I'm spending 8, 9, 10 hours a day doing something that's unfulfilling. So the void that they're feeling is they're actually happy to make a career change to say, I need fulfillment. So you cannot underscore the value of fulfillment in the work environment. I think that translates back to understanding what motivates people. You know, truly understanding that people want to feel appreciated at work, feel valued, feel that they're making a contribution. You know, that for me is understanding someone's motivation.
Yeah, it's really good, man. It is, because I mean, if you think everything is about money, you're going to lose in business. Money is now, I think it used to be the number five. I think it's less than that now. Like, younger generations also don't care about as much money. Like, I think the generation that probably cares more about money than any other generation right now is the baby boomers, right? And I think, like, statistically that's true. Probably Gen X is next, right? But I mean, like, everything below that, like, people don't care about money like they used to. It's not that important to them, right? I mean, it's, so if you can't create an environment where people feel fulfilled at work, like, you're going to lose in business over the next 5 years, because the trend is changing so fast that people that have had traditional companies and they were just, like, killing it for 20 years, like, they're waking up to a very different world today. And they keep saying stuff like, well, you know, these damn people, and, like, why can't things be the same? And, like, people aren't motivated today. And it's just like, dude, like, we got example after example after example of companies that have incredibly motivated people that are just rocking it. You know, and it's not even people that are necessarily earning six-figure incomes, right? I mean, it's like people for $40,000 or $50,000 a year are freaking killing it, you know. And it's just like, well, how do we get these people to six-figure incomes now? But the thing about it is, it's about approaching business differently, and especially understanding teams differently. So I am going to do this. I'm going to make a shameless plug for a training that we have come up called Pivot Point. Pivot Point is a two-day deep dive training that we really show a blueprint of how to think about business differently. And we share everything. It's not one of these things where we're just going to try to give you a little bit, like, you can talk to people that have come to Pivot Point. We share everything that we do in 2 days and really show people how to think differently, how to look at the structure of business differently, how to identify, how to really understand strengths with the people, getting them in the right positions, how to look at the economics of your company differently for scalability, and really just looking at getting more clear and having, like Wesley said, a clear MVVC, mission, vision, values, and culture for your company. And it's an incredible training. So that's happening the first weekend in August in Dallas, Texas. I think it's actually in Southlake. So I don't know. Amy, maybe you can put a link on there, right? But if you're resonating with the kind of stuff that we're talking on here, and maybe you're feeling some pain in your business around, like, do I have the right people? Are they motivated? Maybe you're feeling like, man, I'm working so much right now, and like I'm uncertain what's happening in the economy and like all this kind of stuff. I would encourage you just to take a couple of days off of work, come hang out with us in Dallas, Texas. Just let us share everything that we are doing in our businesses and what we're doing in all of our clients' businesses. We've worked with over 300 companies in the last 5 years. And we've got companies that we've been working with for four or five years now that have gone from literally 8 people doing $700,000 a year in sales to now 130, 140 people doing 12, 14 million in sales. And then we've got companies now that are just like blowing that away. So really, we want to share with you guys how to think about things differently. Because one thing we recognize that I recognized back in 2016 is that things in the business world are going to change so rapidly, but not in the way that people would anticipate them changing. It's not just that the technical side of your business has changed that much. It's in how teams come together, how to hire people, build the right teams, how to structure companies for this kind of next generation of growth and development and success in business. So we want to share that. Amy and Wesley, anything to kind of wrap up on the conversation that we had tonight?
Nope, I think it was great.
All right, no, I'm not going to let you off that easy. I want you to share something. Okay, we'll go to Wesley and then I'll come back to you.
I was on a podcast a little while ago, and one of the things that really stands out is people buy from people. You know, people work at companies because of the other people there. And there's no way for us to replicate human interaction either through engineering or software or anything like that. You know, irrespective if it's Amazon or anything like that, every company has people that work in it. And by nature, human nature, we are dry people. We like to be surrounded by people like ourselves. So create the environment that fosters that. You know, if it is people that are detail oriented or people that are passionately driven, people that are emotionally driven, you know, whatever it is, they will congregate. So create the environment that you want them to show up in.
Yeah, I love that. Amy, what you got?
Well, to that point, Wesley, I think that there's a concept of the team, and I think the teams inside the teams. So knowing that you are going to have a variety of people within your business, you are the people who do the servicing are not going to be the same type of people who do the operations, and you have to embrace that. So utilizing people to lead down, finding the people that are good at operations and letting them lead an operational team to create and foster that, but then also finding ways to connect those people who can kind of be different at the same time, if that makes any sense. I've talked a whole lot today for me.
This is the third call today that we have utilized you on. And I mean, that's like, usually you're a very behind the scenes kind of person. So we really appreciate it, Amy. And yeah, I think I get what you're saying. It's like, look, this is kind of what I took away from it. So I'll paraphrase. It's kind of like find what people are really great at and understand that some people, I mean, people are going to be maybe similar in subsets, like the servicing people may be a little bit more similar, the operational people, the growth people, but still you gotta celebrate how they're similar, how they're different. And it's about understanding, you know, individual strengths, right? And how somebody can lead even when they're different than you, right? Because I love what you said, you're going to need all of it, you know, and that's the thing is it's not just one of them. It is truly understanding that you're going to need a lot of different types of people to build a great business. So Wesley and Amy, thank you so much for joining us tonight for Pivot Ready Live. Guys, Brad will be back with you guys in 2 weeks, and we'll put some messaging out of what we're going to be talking about then. But again, if you're kind of in this place, also, if you just want to reach out and have a conversation with us and just say, hey, just kind of talk to me about what you guys do. One thing is we are not high pressure salespeople. We only work with the companies that we really believe that we can help. And we don't take on clients that we don't absolutely believe that we can really get to know, understand, and help. So most of the time, it takes at least two consultations for us to even make a decision. So if you guys want, just give us a call. We'll spend a little bit of time talking about who you are, what you do in your company, what's important to you, what are the struggles that you're having right now. And then we'll start determining, okay, is this something that is right for the work that we do? Or is this something that maybe we can just refer you to somebody else, or, you know, maybe just give you some info to work on, or whatever the case may be. But if you guys would like to have that conversation with us, reach out to us. You can go to burkflow.com and go to the contact us page, and we'll get in touch with you guys. So Amy and Wesley, thank you so much for your time tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on Pivot Ready Live. We'll be back in 2 weeks on that Tuesday at 6 CST. Thank you.
Ciao.